everywhere you look, our world feels like it's running on a red line. We talk about personal burnout, right? As if it's just psychological. But then you look around and global markets are, well, totally overheated. The planet itself seems like it's running a fever. Supply chains keep snapping.
Yeah, constantly under pressure.
It doesn't feel like just a bunch of separate problems anymore. It feels like a deeper kind of imbalance is going on. A universal crisis, maybe?
I think that's exactly right. And the really fascinating idea from the source material we're diving into today is that all these things, you mentioned your own fatigue, market instability, climate stress, they aren't actually separate.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, they're basically variations on a single underlying pattern. It's physics, really.
Yeah.
Too much drive, let's call it energy potential.
Okay.
And hitting up against too little capacity, too few channels to handle that energy safely.
Okay, so let's unpack that. The single thread. Our deep dive today is into something called the Energy Resistance Principle, or ERP.
ERP.
And you said it comes from neurobiology. That seems surprising.
It does, specifically the work of Martin Picard. But the authors argue it gives us this new grammar of balance,
you know,
something that applies way beyond just cells.
A unified grammar. I like that. So what's our mission today? What should you, our listener, expect to get out of this?
Well, pretty simply, we want to hand you the master key, the idea that explains how the way your cells manage flow, how markets behave, even how our ethical systems work. It's all governed by the same basic physics.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. The ERP gives us a way to measure almost why systems break down. It happens whenever that pressure just completely outruns the capacity.
Right. So let's break it down. The core physics. We need the building blocks first. Number one, energy potential, EP. What is that exactly? The push, the drive.
Yeah. Think of it as the engine, the go factor.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference that wants to level out. Like in a cell, it's a chemical gradient. In a person, it could be ambition or hunger or just stress. In an economy, it's demand, innovation, maybe the profit motive. It's the fundamental push for change.
Got it. The go. But go needs somewhere to go, right?
Yeah.
That brings us to number two, flux capacity, which they just call five. That's the channel, the road.
Exactly. $5 is the infrastructure. It could be blood vessels carrying oxygen or networks of trust in a community or, you know, roads, grids, internet cables in a city. It's the system's ability to actually circulate whatever it generates, how well things flow.
Okay, so we've got the push, EP, and the pathway. When you put them together, we get this thing the authors call system strain or just resistance. What is that telling us? Is it like friction?
Sort of, yeah. It's a measure of how hard the system is working, how much strain it's under to move that potential through the channels it has. High EP, low $5. That means high strain. The system's overheated.
Like pressing the gas pedal hard when the road is narrow and bumpy.
Precisely. It's thermodynamic stress, basically. You don't necessarily need to memorize the formula, but the concept is key. Resistance shows up when potential struggles against limited capacity.
Okay, I think we need that garden hose analogy from the source. That made it click for me.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's do it. So imagine you're watering your garden.
Okay.
EP, the energy potential, that's the tap. How far open is it? How much pressure is pushing water out?
Got it. High potential, tap, wide open.
Right. And the flux capacity, that's the hose itself. How wide is it? Is it kinked?
Makes sense.
And the resistance, the system strain, that's the pressure you feel right at the nozzle.
Ah, okay. So if I crank the tap wide open, high EP, but I've got this tiny, maybe kinked hose, low $5.
Then the pressure at that nozzle is intense, right? Water might spray wildly. It's wasted energy. It's stressful for the hose. Maybe it even bursts. That's high resistance, high strain.
So the goal isn't zero resistance.
No, not at all. That's crucial. The goal is to tune it. Life doesn't want zero resistance. That would be like, well, like a superconductor melting. Total chaos. Flow without form.
Right.
But too much resistance.
Yeah.
That stagnation, gridlock, nothing moves. Think atrophy. Healthy systems live in that Goldilocks zone, that just right middle band.
The perfect spray for the garden. Enough pressure to reach the plants, but gentle enough to nourish, not blast them.
Exactly. Constraint shapes life. It isn't the enemy. It's about finding the right balance between the push and the pathway.
Okay, here's where my mind is kind of blown. The 52 advantage. Capacity is squared in the equation. Why?
Ah, yes. This is maybe the most powerful insight for thinking about resilience. Mm-hmm. Capacity doesn't just add to a system's ability to handle flow. It multiplies it exponentially.
Multiplies how?
Think about it this way. You have one essential pipeline carrying, say, water to a town. High $5, maybe. But if it breaks...
Flow drops to zero. Disaster.
Right. Now, what if you build a second parallel pipeline? You've doubled your dollars. But the resilience hasn't just doubled.
Oh, because if one breaks now...
The other one can still carry the load, or at least part of it. The system becomes way, way more than twice as reliable. That's the five-squared effect in action. It's about redundancy, diversity, multiple pathways.
So doubling your channels, your capacity, can actually more than quadruple your sister's ability to handle stress and keep flowing smoothly.
Exactly right. Which tells you something profound. Investing in diversity, in redundancy, in those connections. That's the most effective way to build long-term stability and lower that overall system strain.
It explains why, maybe, a diverse ecosystem is more resilient than a monoculture crop.
Perfect example. Or why a network of smaller, cooperating businesses might weather a storm better than one giant, brittle corporation. Building capacity first is the winning strategy against stress.
Okay, let's take this elegant physics and see how it scales. You mentioned it started with mitochondria. We usually just think of them as power plants.
Right, the little energy factories. But the source describes them differently as finely tuned conductors of resistance. That kind of flips the script, doesn't it?
Conductors of resistance. How does that work?
Well, they're constantly adjusting how easily electrons, the energy currency, flow through them. Think of it like adjusting the nozzle on that hose, but at a microscopic level.
Okay.
When stress hits, maybe poor diet, lack of sleep, psychological pressure, whatever the system inside the mitochondria kind of stiffens up, the resistance overline rises. Flow becomes harder, less efficient. That's oxidative stress building up.
So stress literally makes the cellular machinery resist energy flow more.
In a way, yes. But then, crucially, when you rest, recover, maybe meditate, the resistance relaxes. The channels open up. Energy moves more freely again. Cellular health isn't about maximizing output constantly. It's this dynamic tuning of resistance.
That resonates. Okay, scale that up from the mitochondria to the whole person, body and mind.
So we know the stress response, right? Fight or flight. That jacks up your EP, adrenaline, cortisol, glucose surge. You're ready for action. High potential.
Yeah, full throttle.
But here's what we often forget. Real recovery isn't just about the EP dropping back down. It has to involve rebuilding the dollar stops.
Yeah.
Repairing the channels.
Rebuilding capacity.
Yeah.
Like physical repair, emotional processing.
Exactly. Think about chronic stress. What is it? It's basically living with high EP all the time. You're constantly mobilized, always on, but your dollars of capacity to handle it is declining.
The channels are getting worn out.
Right. Your ability to drain the stress, to process emotions, to physically repair, it's depleted. Okay. So you feel it as fatigue, inflammation, maybe anxiety, high system strain. Personally,
that feeling of running full speed but getting nowhere, like cycling through mud.
Yeah,
you've got the drive EP but no smooth pathway.
That's a perfect description. And according to this ERP framework, wellness isn't some static state of perfect calm or even maximum effort. It's a rhythm.
A rhythm.
Yeah, a dynamic expansion of EP followed by release, rest, and crucially, rebuilding $5. It's a pulse. Expansion and contraction and balance.
Okay, that makes intuitive sense for a person. Does this pattern keep scaling to like communities?
Yeah. Economies. Yeah.
Absolutely. The logic holds. Think about a society. What's its EP?
Mm-hmm.
Ambition, innovation, economic growth, the drive for progress.
Okay.
And what's its $5? Well, it's our collective institutions, our infrastructure, roads, power grids, internet, but also things like social trust, education systems, healthcare access, the connective tissue.
The channels that let the energy of society flow.
Precisely. So if the rhythm for a cell or a person is tuning resistance, what's the rule for society? The source calls it the law of coherence.
Coherence, meaning what?
Meaning you need to keep EP and $5 aligned. When ambition wildly outpaces infrastructure, when you have massive potential pushing through narrow and adequate channels, the whole system overheats.
Like traffic congestion, or maybe housing crises, or wild speculation in markets.
All classic examples of high EP meeting low dollars, high system strain at the societal level. Inequality itself acts like a massive blockage, slowing down the flow of resources and opportunity for many.
So healthy societies, like healthy organisms, need to constantly invest in their capacity, in that connective tissue.
Yes. Continually invest in what the source calls the civil commons. Things like public health, education, reliable infrastructure. They aren't just nice-to-haves. They are the $5 that allows the EP of the society to flow productively rather than destructively.
So viewed this way, equity and fairness aren't just moral issues.
They're thermodynamic necessities. A wider, fairer flow field, better access for more people, actually lowers the overall systemic resistance for everyone. It improves coherence.
And when that coherence is lost, when potential and capacity are way out of whack,
the stress just cascades. It reverberates from the cell to the self to society and ultimately, as we see now, to the planet.
This ERP idea, it really does feel like a kind of universal grammar. It connects things I never thought were related, like Kate Raworth's donut economics.
Ah, the donut. Yeah, it fits perfectly.
The donut gives us the boundaries, right?
Yeah.
The social foundation below, the ecological ceiling above. Don't fall short. Don't overshoot.
Exactly. But the ERP gives us the physics behind why we overshoot or fall short. It shows us the forces at play. Well, think about the inner ring of the donut, the social deficits.
Yeah.
Falling short on essentials like water, food, healthcare, education. From an ERP perspective, these are simply failures of circulation. Blocked flow.
Low-level tech. Bottlenecks.
Exactly. People have potential, EP, but the channels to realize that access to clean water, decent healthcare, education are blocked or inadequate. So alleviating poverty isn't just charity. It's fundamentally about widening flux capacity, unblocking channels.
Okay. And the outer ring. Ecological overshoot. Climate change. Biodiversity loss.
That's the other side of the coin. The system is overpressurized. It's excessively high human EP, our resource consumption, waste generation, overwhelm the planet's capacity to absorb, regenerate, and maintain stability.
The planetary channels are saturated or breaking down.
Yeah.
High system strain on a global scale.
Precisely. And what's really powerful here is seeing that fixing the social foundation and respecting the ecological ceiling aren't competing goals.
They're both about managing resistance.
Yes. Often by improving the same channels. Investing in, say, decentralized renewable energy grids that widens ecological capacity, less carbon strain, and social capacity, better energy access, potentially more local jobs. You get those FUPI2 super linear benefits for overall system stability. It's about expanding the denominator instead of just endlessly inflating the numerator, EP.
Okay, that reframes the donut in a really interesting way. Now let's try it on something really complex. Economics, and specifically MMT, Modern Monetary Theory. This ERP lens might actually make it clearer.
I think it does. The core MMT idea that often confuses people is that for a government that issues its own currency, money itself isn't the primary constraint.
Right. What is then?
Real capacity. Visible fiber source. The actual resources, skills, infrastructure available in the economy. Currency, in ERP terms, primarily creates energy potential, EP. Demand. Purchasing power.
So the government can create money, EP, like turning up the tap.
Exactly. But if the economy's real capacity to produce goods and services, the available labor, the supply chains isn't wide enough or is kinked,
then that money potential just hits a wall. It can't flow into actual goods and services smoothly.
Right. And that brings us straight to inflation.
Ah. So inflation isn't just too much money chasing too few goods.
From an ERP view, it is high system strain. It's excess potential, demand, money, being crammed into narrow or inflexible channels of production and distribution.
We have the EP, but not enough housing, or computer chips, or skilled workers, or port capacity, the five lie, to absorb it productively.
Precisely. The resistance goes way up. Prices rise.
So this gives a different perspective on fiscal policy, too, doesn't it? Like austerity versus investment.
It really does. Traditional austerity often focuses on reducing the EP, cutting spending, raising taxes, but frequently does so by cutting public investment, which actually shrinks $5 of capacity.
Which could make the resistance problem worse in the long run, even if demand drops temporarily.
Potentially, yes. It can shrink the channels faster than it reduces the pressure. A regenerative approach, informed by something like ERP or MMT principles, would argue for targeting fiscal policy, specifically at raising real capacity first.
Like investing in infrastructure, education, green energy grids.
Exactly. Widen the channels before or while you inject more potential. The goal is to lower the system's overall long-term resistance to flow, enabling more potential to be converted into well-being with less strain.
This really brings in an ethical dimension. If lowering unnecessary resistance is the goal, what should we value? This connects to the philosopher John McMurtry and his life value ethics.
Yes, McMurtry argued that the real economy isn't just markets, it's the civil commons. These shared systems that provide life support, clean water, healthcare, education, stable ecosystems.
The things that enable life to flourish.
Right, and ERP sees these commons as society's absolutely critical flux channels. They aren't optional extras, they're the pathways that allow life potential to actually flow and manifest.
So, ethically, what does that imply?
It implies that justice, fairness, meeting basic needs. These aren't just abstract ideals. They are, in a sense, thermodynamic principles. Unmet needs represent blocked potential high EP with near zero flow, massive resistance points in the system.
And the act of fixing that, of ensuring people have access.
That is, quite literally, the act of lowering resistance. The source puts it beautifully. Justice is the lowering of unnecessary resistance in the flow of life. Compassion is conductance.
Wow. Compassion is conductance. It's actively opening a channel so that life potential can flow into well-being.
It's a profound way to reframe things, isn't it?
It really is. So if this physics applies from cells to societies, how do we actually live this? How can you, listening now, apply this idea of tuning resistance day to day?
Well, the source suggests seeing our own bodies as these incredible living laboratories for understanding resistance. Think about simple things. Rest, mindful breathing, gentle movement, real human connection.
These aren't just stress relief techniques.
They're metabolic regulators. They actively lower internal system strain. They help widen the internal channels for energy, for waste removal, for emotional processing. They help restore that healthy rhythm.
So it comes back to timing. Not just pushing harder, but knowing when to push, increase EP, and crucially, when to yield, rest, and rebuild capacity.
Exactly that. Yeah. Matching effort to capacity, dynamically. Not just trying to max out EP constantly, which is the burnout recipe.
And does this scale up to how we think about governing?
I think it has huge implications. Instead of seeing government as just, you know, bureaucracy or regulation, see it as the potential architect of society's circulatory system.
The designer of the channels.
Yes. Public institutions, wise regulations, investments, they can act as designed resistors, not blockers, but shapers of flow, aiming to widen the overall channel for life, constantly investing in that real capacity, universal basic services, clean energy, education, strong communities.
So good governance, from this perspective, is fundamentally about lowering systemic resistance for everyone, making it easier for potential to flow into well-being.
That's the idea. Which leads to the ultimate goal here. The source suggests the path to a healthier, more coherent future isn't about endless manic growth or just accelerating everything. It's about attunement.
Attunement, like tuning an instrument.
Precisely. The continual, skillful, dynamic tuning of power. EP in form.
Okay.
Adjusting the tension until resistance doesn't feel like strain anymore, but transforms into resonance. Harmony.
Like that perfectly tuned garden hose delivering just the right flow.
Exactly. Coherence emerges from that synchronized, balanced flow. That's the true wealth. It requires shifting from a mindset of domination and control to one of dialogue, listening, and finding harmony between potential and the pathways it flows through. Hashtag tag tag outro.
So the deep lesson here, maybe, in a world that's just obsessed with speed, with maximizing everything, is that life itself at every scale already knows how to do this, how to endure, how to regenerate. We're just perhaps rediscovering the physics she uses.
Finding the rhythm again. Every system that lasts finds its rhythm. It trades brute force for balanced flow.
Okay, so let's leave you, our listener, with a final provocative thought building on all this.
The source material actually proposes creating something called an energy resistance index, ERI. Imagine using that instead of, say, GDP as our main measure of progress.
An energy resistance index? What would it measure?
It would try to quantify how effectively a system, whether it's a person, a city, a nation, converts its potential, effort, resources, innovation, into actual felt well-being per unit of stress or strain placed on the system, both socially and ecologically.
Wow. Okay. So not just how much stuff we make, but how efficiently and healthily we turn potential into quality of life without burning ourselves or the planet out.
Exactly. So here's the question for you to ponder. If your own personal life or your community or even your country were assessed using an ERI, like a doctor checking blood pressure, what would the diagnosis be?
High strain. Lots of potential, but blocked channels. Or maybe low potential needing a boost. Where's the resistance highest?
And crucially, what channel, what specific area of capacity would need widening first to improve the flow, lower the strain, and increase genuine well-being?
That's a powerful question to sit with.
It suggests the path forward really does start with listening to the flow and the resistance in ourselves and in the world around us.
Thank you for taking this deep dive with us today.